folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is...
Hello. Good morning, Hava. Drove all the way this morning in the snow to be here with you. That's how much I love being here with you.
Oh, she's so great. I just don't know what to do. I'm going to put my earphones on, and we're going to be talking to quite a few people today, right,
Hava? A couple more. Yeah. Yeah, we've got two on the phone, two in the studio.
And we have a series coming up on criminal justice and different topics, criminal justice and the mentally ill and criminal justice in a small town and training of officers and so forth and so on. But today, who do we have with us? Hey, Klaus Van Suderheim, you there? All right. Gary, are you there? Gary?
I am from Bridges, Minnesota.
Okay. The sound takes a while to get here from Minnesota. Okay. And you want to introduce our other guest?
I would love to introduce our guest. This is my friend Jacob Rayford. Hello. Good morning, Jacob.
Hey, how's it going? Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. So Jacob is a musician and an activist that I've connected with down in Phoenix over the summer and fall. In my work on police reform, I really just stayed connected with the folks that are really making efforts to make change and really work on police reform. Jacob's one of those people that's taken all this demonstration and is turning it into legislation with a small growing group of activists in Phoenix. And all over Phoenix, Chandler Gilbert. And Jacob, thank you for joining us today. This is going to be for me, too, because you and I have not really connected more beyond police reform. Give us a little background on you.
As you said earlier, I am an artist, first and foremost. I'm a musician by the name of Rocky Tirade. Things that's always been a motif of my work has been, civil rights, things of that nature. As such, I found myself on the ground throughout various events, from going as far back as Occupy Phoenix, during the whole Occupy movement, to the unfortunate circumstances surrounding Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown, and just Phoenix-focused things that we had done in order to lift the Black Lives Matter movement.
So, Jacob, you've been really protesting police brutality
really,
and police. You've been basically a protester and an organizer of protest against what police brutality, against discrimination that you believe in, that's in the police department, right?
Right, and that's what I was getting to here. With the events surrounding last year's deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Deion Johnson, everybody got in the streets, and we sought to turn, like Harvey said, these demonstrative actions into legislative change. So we formed a group, and we had basically made it an effort for fall or summer through fall, in order to educate individuals about the history of police violence and the disparate treatment of the Black and Brown and Indigenous community at the hands of the criminal justice system, and of course to educate individuals on their impact on the upcoming voting season, whatnot.
Yeah, so, and Rocky, on that note...
Just a traditional grassroots...
Yeah, sorry, cutting you off. And I'm going to apologize here ahead of time, Jacob. We've got some delay in the studio with your with your phone, so call. Please excuse us if we're jumping in. So Rocky, thank you. You alluded to a couple of things there that we can jump in here. The etymology of policing, the origins of policing, how it's played out over the years. And you and I have seen really, and in Phoenix, and people in Phoenix have seen this crisis of trust with our law enforcement, that there's really a huge lack of visibility, transparency, accountability, and this is really what we're working towards making a part of policing down in Phoenix.
Absolutely. Yeah, you spoke about issues of mistrust and lack of accountability, lack of transparency. You know, these are things that plague both the Phoenix Police Department and the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, so much so that with NCAO, for instance, they were sued by the ACLU in order to provide, you know, certain levels of transparency and to disaggregate this information that would point towards, you know, the discrimination against the Black and Brown Indigenous community, disparate treatment when it came to law enforcement practices and things of that nature. And of course, with the Phoenix Police Department, with the issue surrounding the Brady List and the fact that there's a myriad of officers that are still employed by the police department who have committed unlawful acts, ranging from you know, lying about uncertain reports to physical harm to planting evidence to sexual harassment and so on and so forth. So obviously this underscores this issue that we have a lot of dangerous individuals out there who have the ability to harm and kill innocent citizens and with impunity.
Right.
So what is the, explain what the Brady List is and also what the name of your organization is, so folks kind of know who you are and where you're coming from.
All right, so I can start with the organization, the groups. I was a co-founder of the group, the We Rising Project, that for all intents and purposes was the main entity that was leading demonstrations in Phoenix, Arizona, from early June until November. And I do operate independently. I also work with a group called the Unity Collective. I believe that was on the flyer for today's event, that has individuals like Janelle Wood from Black Mothers Forum, Sarah Tyree, who ran for state legislator, Kenneth Smith, Dr. Atora Elijah, and numerous other individuals and entities from different areas of social activism. You know, and we're just moving towards creating a more equitable America or Maricopa County. Now, you're asking about the Brady List, and that's more or less a list of officers that have committed unjust acts, that have issues with honesty, and it's a way to better inform or protect those who are seeking legal action against these officers. And one of the issues with the Brady List here is it's so scattered and so inaccurate, and that it's not able to be used in order to find these officers accountable.
Right.
It's a means to ensure that proper record keeping of conduct is upheld.
Yeah, and we're watching that prosecutors and police departments are failing to disclose these lists or to keep good lists of these cops, and they don't have to fire them. They can just move from, if they haven't been fired, they can move from department to department. So what's happening is that, you know, in this grander picture of, you know, lack of accountability and transparency, unions, the cops, the county attorney's office, they all want to kind of keep these cops off the list or, you know, keep the information until the trial's over. So we're, I mentioned this on the wrap-up show on January 4th, the reporting of by ABC 15, full disclosure, very good look at this this issue. And so, yes, we're seeing cops get away with dishonesty. 84% of the cops on the list were dealing with dishonesty. And you have to trust law enforcement. You have to trust police. And if you have a crisis of trust, it needs to be rebuilt.
Ava, this is a list compiled in the police department. It's an internal list of the problems some officers have experienced or have experienced with them, I guess.
It's a way to ensure the constitutional rights of people so they get a fair process. If they're, you know, taken to trial, they're accused of something. This list is compiled of cops that have a history of dishonesty, of corruption, planting evidence, any of that, so that it can be a broad picture. All of the evidence is, if a cop has arrested somebody and charged somebody with something, that all of the evidence, you know, a fair process can take place. And obviously this is not something that cops and departments want to disclose.
Well, how many officers are on this list?
100 in Arizona.
100 in Arizona, all of Arizona.
Jacob, maybe you can speak to this.
Over 100.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these are...
I'm sorry. It's for understanding... I'm sorry. There's a little bit of lag, as Hava did point out. I did want to state that it's over 100 and close to 110 in Phoenix.
Just Phoenix. That's
now,
right.
Now, there's 2,900
right.
police officers. So that's Phoenix. That's just Phoenix alone. So right. That's almost 1 in 30 officers are on the Brady
right.
for some sort of misconduct. Or, unlawful behavior.
Yeah, and people can go look at the case of Anthony Armour if they want to get a little deeper look at how this the lack of disclosure really affected a case for a woman down in Phoenix. We don't have to jump into that one specifically, but there are instances of not disclosing the Brady List has really not worked in the favor of citizens.
Let me ask you this. Give me an example of the kind of thing in detail on the list. You had one example.
Anthony Armour. Jacob, I want you to jump in on this, too. Do you know that story, Anthony Armour?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you tell.
Anthony Armour, this is from my understanding. That's an individual who had, about 15 different investigations.
Yep.
Some ranging in sexual assault. There's been shootings. There's a time where he unlawfully entered a household, arrested this woman, and even after he's told to let her go, unlawfully put her in jail.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other officers, such as Diana Pineda and Victor Christman, who planted drug paraphernalia on an unsheltered citizen. The former cop is, formerly mentioned cop is still on the force. Mm-hmm. There's, Logan Edler and Christopher Tiona, who pepper sprayed an unsheltered woman, who has mental health issues. They attempted to not document it. These are things that only a few years ago. And there's briefing issues that would tie into the issue of police misconduct and, the inability to, or the, lack of intent to use the Brady List for when it comes to prosecutorial reasons and things of that nature.
Yeah, you can see the prosecutor in the Anthony Armour case. The prosecutor in the Anthony Armour case, this last case, she withheld information.
So we're looking at a lot
of. And then, so when confronted.
Go ahead, Jacob. We're having this time lag, which I don't understand, but we have it. And so we'll stop talking and let you explain a little bit about, because I think folks up in Sedona, in the Verde Valley, want to know in more detail, you know, what the problem is. And I think that they know, but let's spell it out as well as you can.
I mean, more or less, it's a list of officers who are not trustworthy, who, you know, just based off moral reason, should not serve under the police department. Because there is
no centralized Brady list. There's no way to hold these officers accountable and to look at the track record of misconduct in the police force from these specific officers and their supervisors turning a blind eye. I mean, this goes all the way up to the top. I mean, when questioned by the ABC 15 investigator, Chief Jerry Williams expressed annoyance at how a particular officer was on the list for an issue committed 23 years ago, even though she believes that they turned the life around. Personal connection does not merit whether or not someone is safe enough to be in the police force. You know, they're willing to risk harm to the community over their personal opinions. I mean, she, even when it comes to her misunderstanding, she was actually called out by that station for using that term, I think it's voir dire, out of context, which is for jury selection, not for Brady list. This is similar to an incident when Maricopa County Attorney Alice Bell also went on record. Not having an understanding of the Brady list.
Exactly.
Saying that, so basically, judges do not make decisions on whether Brady list information is disclosed. This is supposed to be automatically disclosed by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for transparency and just for to enable justice in these cases. So, I'll quit after this. But how would you feel if you or a family member were a victim of police brutality or misconduct? The case goes to trial. The cop is found not guilty. And you discover years later that the cop had plenty of issues documented from a Brady list that never saw the light of day, right?
Exactly.
So it's
well, the thing is, if you're there,
what you look for. That's what that list is supposed to hold.
Mm-hmm.
If you're there, you kind of know what happened. So, I mean, let me ask, what's the goal? How do we get you think there's a lot of really bad apples in the police department, and maybe structurally there's deeper problems with racism and with the kind of people going in and their training. So what can be done about this? What does your organization, what do you think can be done about the problem that you see?
Well, gosh, they're doing some very proactive things. So this is why I've had Jacob had you on the show today, because you guys are really making some big strides in calling for accountability, transparency, and non-emergency responses to some of these crises that are leading to excessive use of force. So So jump in on this, because I know we haven't dove into the
policy.
Yeah. Yeah, you go ahead. You're doing such great work down there. I'm going to let you
change policy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So, change in policy. That's what we look for. We look for change in policy, and when it comes to these issues in Phoenix or in Tempe, we look at ways to create legislative change in order to force accountability and to force the change in police culture and to better protect citizens. I'm part of a group called the Tempe Public Safety Advisory Task Force, which is put together by the city of Tempe in order to restructure these policies and to put in place a system that benefits those who were unjustly targeted, primarily the Black and Brown and Indigenous LGBTQ unsheltered community. The way that this is used is that is politicized against change, it's easily researchable. I was able to go on this website called policeone.com and look at their perspective of the Brady list. And I'm just going to read it verbatim, because it's scary how they'll structure things to encourage people to slip through the grasp of accountability. So they said for officers being placed on the Brady list, it could be career damaging or a career-ending incident. Beyond the stigma and damage to their reputation, it can limit their assignments, advancements, or job prospects, and possibly result in termination. Prosecutors can decide to avoid having a Brady list cop testify or refuse to accept a case in which they're an essential witness. This could limit an officer from any police activity that might lead to the witness stand. Most departments can't afford to limit officers to administrative duties indefinitely. The result could be termination with little chance of employment as an officer elsewhere. So they're basically saying that the Brady list is bad because if you get caught, you're going to be punished. Like, this is people who adhere to and advocate for the police culture.
Right. Yeah.
Like, how is that not dangerous? We go to these city council meetings and we sit at these Phoenix City Council meetings, and you have people like Sal DiCicco, Mike Nowakowski, who overtly back this you know, a police department who refuses to find itself accountable, who mm-hmm. Finds dishonest means in order to fund overly militarized police force when it can go into civil services, like ones that we're trying to build up that mirror Cahoots in Oregon. And, you know, we're facing a legitimate crisis. Yeah. And this is the language that they're spinning to their specific demographic in order to hopefully politicize them, you know, build a political energy behind them not being able to, you know, be held accountable in court. Or, you know, I'm sorry if it's a little ineffable right now, but sometimes you get a little passionately worked up.
It's great.
Well, tell us a little bit about the kind of legislation you're combining both street demonstrations with advocacy of legislation. So tell us
NOCAP.
A little bit what the legislation sounds like, Jacob. You don't have to tell us the whole detail, but give folks a sense who are, we're not in Phoenix. We don't know the issues in Phoenix. And so give folks a little
Absolutely.
Detail of what you're advocating.
Okay, so one of the main things that we're pushing right now is a program that mirrors a crisis response initiative called Cahoots, which is based in Oregon. So what we're doing is trying to bring an iteration of that down to Phoenix, and we're calling it the Neighborhood Organized Crisis Awareness Program, or NOCAP for short. The reason behind this is, you know, just due to the data that we have obtained, and just the history and knowledge of police dispatches leading to harm or police brutality because they're not trained in issues such as mental health, they're not trained in how to deal with or interact with the unsheltered community, or how to deal with someone who is going through a substance abuse crisis. We're creating community-centered programs with professionally trained individuals who will be responsible for looking after individuals who fall under these certain types of dispatches. And if you look at some of these police calls for service over the past year or so, you can see that there is a need for this sort of service in Phoenix, Arizona. You have just the way that some of these are categorized shows an intrinsic misunderstanding of some of these issues. Labeling certain dispatches under quote unquote, and this is verbatim, by the way, insane person. That, by the way, there's 3,483 dispatches for that over the past year. Mentally ill subjects, 6,545. Suicide attempt, 2,716. I can recall a few weeks ago where there was a woman on the west side of Phoenix who the police were dispatched to her location because she was a suicide threat, quote unquote. It resulted in her losing her life. Now, imagine if you had someone who was trained in mental health awareness who could show up and provide an empathetic approach. And instead of providing a show of force and potentially pushing this overboard and, of course, using use of force and taking that person's life, you can save that person and give them a second chance, you know? Or for the unsheltered community, how many of those fall under suspicious persons, which, by the way, is 46,429 dispatch calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there have been cases where and you can just the example I gave before with the individuals on the Brady list who have planted paraphernalia on a woman in May of 2015 and attempted to not include that in their write-up for that specific call.
Exactly.
And we, of course, we know of the history and recent history of the mistreatment of the unsheltered treat of mm-hmm. individuals
we've seen
over
it.
In the zone area in downtown Phoenix.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Right. These things are part of policies and legislative action we wish to introduce to the city of Phoenix.
And what you're really talking about,
working
Jacob,
side by side with the Grassroots Law Project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with Cahoots. Go ahead.
Yeah, Grassroots Law. I just want to make sure we don't speak over that name because it's been amazing to have their you know, partnership in getting this all happening. And really, Jacob, what you're speaking to is this hashtag of the summer, defund the police. This is what we're talking about when we talk about defund the police, this very polarizing hashtag. You know, we're talking about funneling, and I know you guys are looking at getting this no cap in the budget talk soon. This is where we talk about moving funds from a very highly, overly budgeted police department into social services that can answer these non-emergency calls. So I just really want to make it clear, with this is what we're talking about when it comes to defund.
Because I think when middle-class people, ordinary people hear the phrase defund the police, there couldn't be further from what they want. I mean, I always think progressives and liberals underestimate how much security means to the rest of American public. And I spent my whole life in progressive politics, and we've been beaten up over and over and over again with the ideas of violence exaggerated by basically Republicans and conservatives. And so when I hear defund the police, I think that is a really stupid slogan. And I think if you explained it, I think it makes more sense. But I have to say, I think it really hurt Democrats in the election, that kind of rhetoric, because people want security. And whether you like that or not, we have to try to understand it, that they're not willing to take personal risk for stuff. Also, I just say dealing with the mentally ill is extremely difficult, and I think that you're right to get in social services people there, because the police are trained to deal with it by a, what they call command presence, to try to take over and force the person
exactly.
to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot with people, and they're very difficult to deal with, understand? I've dealt with them, and people in this state of mind are extremely difficult, and they're even dangerous to you. So you have to be very careful. But I think that the police training now is completely wrong for dealing with the mentally ill. I mean, that's my take on it. I don't know about your slogan, defund the police, but tell us a little bit more. You're talking about shifting funds to social services and stuff, when obviously it's a social service issue to some extent.
Well, we're talking about budgets. We're talking about, you know, and I'm going to let you take over on this one, Jacob.
Right. We're talking about. Right. So when we say defund the police, I mean, yeah, I mean, for some people it may trigger an alarm, because we live, you know, like you said, in a world where we uphold and advocate for police culture, because we live in a world where there's always a constant fear of something happening, this invisible threat, so to speak. I mean, we can even look at that when assessing the past few months of demonstrative action. They legitimately called nonviolent peaceful protesters violent individuals, that we were causing riots, that they never once brought up the fact that there were infiltrators that were creating violence. And you saw some of those same faces find their ways into Washington, D.C. So they always create an idea of a threat in order to shift the attention away from problems that can easily be rectified. So when we say defend the police, we know that it might be a little divisive in nature. But I mean, that's because they choose to add a negative connotation to it. They added a negative connotation to Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. They're just saying that our lives matter. Mm-hmm. And they found a way to politicize that against social equity and justice. So when we say defund the police, yes, we literally mean financially defund the police, but that is literally militarized. I mean, we can look at the average police officer now and take a look at this, say, an officer from the mid-90s, and see there is an overwhelming difference in between the way that they engage in their practices and just how they're funded. They're driving around with legitimate tanks. When we had our nonviolent protests, they showed up in military like plaid armor, like body vests, and they looked like they came out of a video game. It's absurd. So when we say defund the police, we obviously mean financially, but we mean in character as well. So there's no reason for them to be granted the opportunity to the right to police, so to say, the unsheltered community, when there's various instances where their inability to properly look after unsheltered individuals has led to their death. And we can name someone like Mohammed Mohammed as an example. You know, just the fact that their budget is blown out of proportion, or the calls that have got, that have led to deaths of mentally ill individuals. It's there's so many reasons why a lot of these dispatches can be filed under under social services,
yeah,
as opposed to someone showing up with a badge or a gun. This isn't an armed robbery. This isn't a shootout. These are people with human crises,
yeah,
and we need to assess it as such and not add to the trauma of someone who's already on the precipice of harm.
Yeah.
There were, looking at the statistics, let me ask you about this. There were 12,000 violent crimes in Phoenix in 2020. This is aggravated assault and homicide. 12,000 people were victims of that kind of physical violence by somebody. So how do you figure that calculation in when people are concerned about, when they see a figure like that, like a violent crime increased 25% last year? So let's have your answer on that.
Okay, so I have numbers as well. So, I mean, we can look at, so we have non-criminal calls, 150,000. We have non-violent calls. That's a little bit below 350,000 calls. So, I mean, with some of these dispatches and how they are, how they're documented, they are a little ambiguous and on purpose. So what would define some of these calls? So it's, you really need to dive into it from a more myopic perspective in order to really assess what that's about and then apply it to conversations such as this. So when we're here to speak about police brutality, the criminal justice system, and how it's disproportionately targeted the Black and Brown community. But I guess I asked you the purpose behind bringing up the violent call.
Well, when you
violent,
when you have 12,000, when you have 12,000 murders and physical aggravated assault, which is very serious. In a town, that's going to cause a reaction, a seeking of security. Now, I'm not saying that the seeking of security is necessarily correct, but it is an issue. So when people hear defund the police, they also know about these things. If they don't know the statistics, they get the feeling of insecurity. And so I think as someone who wants to defund the police, My only take on it is you have to see how that will make people feel more secure in their lives, right? And I know that you've got examples of police misconduct. That's very important. People need to know that. There needs to be retraining of police and so forth and so on. And maybe there should be shifting of stuff to social services. But you need to make this case to the rest of the public. That's my point. For instance, there were... Here's some more statistics, 204 bias crimes. That is police going to a crime where 63 of them were intimidation, 94 were anti-black crimes of intimidation or assault. So there, that's what I'm saying is that you need to address, or that's my only take, and I won't preach to you anymore, because I think you're making a good case for your cause, but that's why I'm saying what I'm saying.
Right. So I mean, we can look at some of the right. So burglary, for instance, for the Phoenix Police Department reporting, there was 4,901 cases between January and June of 2019. For instance, 74 cases of homicide between January and June of 2019. 93. Between January and June of last year. So the reason why I responded in that manner is because it felt that the information you should have provided wasn't necessarily accurate, or because you used that there is I forgot the number that you provided, but you had led with there being like violent crimes and death. When if there was a number that exponentially high, obviously we would not be talking about the police. We'd be talking about introducing the National Guard, because that would that you're speaking about war zone numbers at that point.
And let's be clear too that a majority of the calls are non-emergency calls.
But we need to.
Right, that people are calling because of noise complaints.
The majority of non-emergency calls
are almost trespassing.
360,000 calls.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I provided a statistic that showed that an overwhelming majority of those numbers should be considered to be social services calls, not calls that involve the officer showing up because an unsheltered individual is walking through a neighborhood or seeking shelter, someone who looks at them from a socially stratified level calls the office, calls the police department because they fear for their lives, and all of a sudden they're being suffocated in the street.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that should be tackled by people who lead with empathy and not with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the law enforcement, the rule is command presence. You're in a dangerous or iffy situation, and you take command and order people around. And when you order innocent people around, they get really pissed off. And when you order the crazy people around, they also get really pissed off, and you end up with a violent incident. And I agree with you. There's ways to avoid this. And I think that to some extent I would see police being retrained in how to deal with the mentally ill, because it's a huge portion of what they actually get called for, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to see them retrained. I want to see them not handle these cases at all. Not only do we need to make sure that we have an organization that is focused towards these levels of social services, but it is 100% independent from the police department. Mm-hmm. They have shown that they can't even manage their data. How can they manage lives?
Go ahead and talk a little bit about more how this would all work, Jacob, and again, what you think, what your position is for the prescriptions for what you see as police malfeasance and overreactions and violence toward individuals, or overreactions for people who are not really doing criminal things. Now, in Sedona, one of the things when I read the paper that people are getting arrested for is trespassing. They're going into a store and not leaving and so forth and so on, and squatting in different places. And so that seems to be, even a little town, that seems to be an issue. How will what you're doing make Phoenix better place for everybody, black, white, Latino, everybody, middle class, whatever?
Because we apply a mentality to the appropriate circumstance. So if someone is, something that affects all communities, which is drug abuse issues. So if someone is, say, coming down from, some sort of illegal substance or whatnot, and, they're seeking help, the officers aren't showing up and attempting to arrest them and throw them in jail. Maybe they need to be treated at that moment. Maybe they need some sort of holistic care, and that's the way that you can provide welfare towards these communities. When it comes to unsheltered individuals who may be trespassing, have someone who shows up who has a rapport with these individuals. I can name Unsheltered Phoenix as a wonderful example. One of the main individuals who runs that entity has a wonderful relationship with these citizens in the specific areas. It's not hard to hear their viewpoints and hear how they could be taken care of. And when it comes to how to benefit these sort of communities overall, there's now we're talking about various policies that could be introduced to the city in order to ensure the welfare of those individuals. When it comes to the treatment of the black and brown communities by the Phoenix Police Department, and we were just talking about the Brady List. We need to centralize this information, make sure the Maricopa County Attorney's Office is in fear of being of being scrutinized for not providing this information to those on the case in order to ensure that there's a proper track record being assessed when looking at this officer and determining that they are not fit to serve and move to other departments in order to escape justice and accountability for their actions. There's so many ways to spin that, but the focus that we're on right now, that my collective is on right now, is the Who's Inspired Project, the neighborhood organized gun crisis.
How does this become reality, Jacob? How are you making this a reality, no cap? Because this is super important.
How does this become reality? Right. So what we're doing is, of course, this involved working with the Grassroots Law Project, involved working with Whiteberg Clinic and Cahoots over in Oregon, and structuring a plan that works best for our community. We already brought it to the office of Councilman Carlos Garcia and gained the support of his office, and more or less just getting this information out to the community. This is something that it benefits everyone. It even benefits the police department. They don't want these calls answered. They don't want the scrutiny that comes from when one of their officers operates outside of the outside of conduct.
Yeah.
Everybody benefits from this, primarily the community.
And this is something that can work up here in the Verde Valley.
Right now, we're in the process of getting this information out there, building them up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to wrap it up.
Something that's
Joshua.
Not hard for us to say. There's a $10 million deficit that we can take. That doesn't even impact the police department. There's
exactly.
$10 million open, for instance, and we can take that and funnel that toward this program.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us. We're running out of time here. I wanted you to have the whole 45 minutes to make the case for what you're doing. Gary, are you still on the line?
Oh, Gary, hi.
I am.
Gary, we're gonna.
I really applaud what Jacob's doing.
I think it's the week after next, we'll do part two, and we're going to be talking to you about police reform issues and stuff.
Prison reform. Mm-hmm.
And prison reform.
Mass incarceration.
And the other things on your Gary produces these wonderful long outlines, and this one's very good.
Yeah.
This one's very short. You don't know. It's like 3 pages. So, Gary, we'll talk to you next time when we do criminal justice. We're running out of time. We want to thank the Democrats of the Red Rocks for their support. They have an interesting film program coming up, some really good social progress films and social issues. A Year of Living Dangerously is one of them, and there's another one, it's an older one. I have the notes here. So we want to thank Democratic Perspective.
Democrats of the Red Rocks.
Red Rocks and El Portal for their support.
Pet friendly and
beautiful place.
Really lovely.
So we want to thank those people. We also want to thank the Yavapai Democratic Party for their contribution. And we really appreciate it because I know that the party is based really on the other side of the mountain in Prescott. And I think I really want to thank them for their support because our focus is really over the Verde Valley and nationally and statewide. And we don't do much for folks over there in terms of investigative work. So,
well, thank you, Jacob, for joining us today. It was really great to have you shine a light on this, what's happening all over our state. And, it was a pleasure to be in the studio with you today, Steve.
Thank you so much. Thank you both for having me on there.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us, Jacob. Enjoyed talking to you. All of our shows are available on podcasts on our website. And we're trying to get the video going again because we had so many people listening in on the video. I don't think they sit there and look at us talking. I think they turn it on and then walk away. So I'm getting signals. Thank you very much for being with
us,
folks.
Thank you.
Democratic Perspective.
You've been listening. listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.